I knew this question was coming about the advice, and I've been thinking about it. And I have one piece of advice that I would give to new hikers or old hikers. I don't care hikers; it doesn't matter. I think it can touch everyone, and that is going it alone versus going with other people.
The Life in Motion podcast is brought to you by Actual Outdoors. They help build beautiful brands that highlight the approachable and authentic parts of outdoor recreation. Said simply, they keep it real. Learn more at actualoutdoors.com.
This is a Life in Motion audio experience, a podcast about travel, action sports, culture, and more.
What's up, and welcome to episode 194 of Life in Motion. I've got Mike with me from Redline Guiding. They offer low-key outdoor adventures and education experiences with offerings geared towards those that are newer to the outdoor activities. I'm excited to hear his story and how he's helping others gain confidence to get outside. Mike, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited. Definitely, checking out the website, the different things that you're up to. And it sounds like, you've had quite a journey. So kind of let's start there. You know, what is your origin story? Where are you from? Kind of what led you in the outdoors in the first place?
Well, I have to blame my parents, as most kids do. I think the lucky ones that their parents get them out in the mountains. But my mom was obsessed with New Hampshire. My parents both loved New Hampshire. We considered it home base, even though my dad was in the service and we traveled around a lot. But we always used to come back here. My mom loved Mount Washington, and we used to hike Mount Washington. And I was in my dad's backpack at two going up there, and I was climbing it on my own two legs at four.
Wow.
So it's just always been like a part of me. I dated and brought girls into the Northern Presidentials, to some of the RMC cabins, which is the Randolph Mountain Club. And just things like that. Unusual for a teen, but not unusual for me. I loved it. So it's always been part of me. I did have a hiatus in my life, about 20 years where I didn't really hike. If you were to hold a gun to my head and tell me to pick mountains or oceans, I would pick mountains. And my ex-wife was an oceans, so I compromised and became an oceans. For 20 years, I didn't really hike, and I smoked cigarettes too, which made, compounded issues. And I quit that. I ended up having a divorce with her. The smoking might have been part of it. I don't know, because she actually went back to smoking. We quit at the same time. I didn't know, but that's a different story. But I ended up having a moment in my life where I was like, I'm out here hiking again, and this is great, and I can't get enough. And then when she left, I was at a position in my life where I had to have a do-over. I had to sell things. I had a company. I sold that company, and it was a mess for a while. But I was in a situation to just kind of pick a fate, if you will. And I said, oh, I want to become a hiking guide. I said, I love hiking, and it should be a really cool thing to introduce others to this. Contacted a local guide company in the valley here, and they said, you want to do what? And I said, I'd like to be a hiking guide. And I just laughed. They said, there's no such thing. But actually, there's a long history of that sort of thing here in the White Mountain National Forest, going way back to the 1800s. But I decided I was going to do it anyway, undeterred. So I went and I got trained. I did avalanche training. I did medical training. I'm a wilderness first responder. I've done L&T. I'm an L&T instructor. I've done all these various things that I felt would be helpful to become a good guide in New Hampshire. And then I guided. I've been doing it for about 11 years or so. I guided voluntarily. I guided for the AMC. I became an AMC Class 1 leader, which has carte blanche. You can go anywhere, anytime, with any number of people. Great credential to have. And I just kept doing it and ended up working for someone else. And then I needed to move up, so to speak. The sale of my other company, I was running off of royalties, so to speak. So I had to start a company. I started Redline Guiding. So all the maps that show the trails around here, they show the trails as red lines and we guide on them. So I figured, oh, that's a good name. And I figure if anybody ever wants to like ramp up our offers, if I ever sell the company or if I do it myself, there's always that tachometer reference to, you know, revving up our stuff. So
yeah, that makes sense. That's cool. You know, definitely, you know, starting, you know, hiking on your own 2 feet per se, you know, at such a young age. And then, you know, even as you kind of drifted away from hiking and that aspect of it with the oceans, but ultimately kind of circled back to it. You know, obviously there's a deep appreciation there. What was it about it that, I mean, do you think it was mainly since you were kind of, I guess, exposed to it at such a young age, you kind of didn't know any better, that's why you fell in love with it? Or like what?
I appreciated the mountains, and not all kids do. Some kids, they go out there and they're bored. They want to be on their phone. They want to be home playing Xbox or whatever. And I liked it. I liked the smells. I liked the ambiance, which is like in Pinkham Notch, which AMC is positioned there at the Pinkham Notch Visitor Center. Everything's a log cabin. It's just, it's woodsy. It's nice. And I just really, really dig that stuff. The clouds. I'm undeterred. If I go up in the mountains and it's cloudy, I'm looking at the short views and I'm appreciating the mist and how absolutely silent it is in the mountains. It's something you don't really get at home most of the time, you know.
Yeah.
Until the power goes out and the refrigerator stops running. It's like, oh my God, it's really quiet. Well, the mountains are like that. You can hear your heartbeat. You can hear your respiration and you become kind of like, you get in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe you don't know what I mean. I don't know.
No, that makes sense. And the way that you just described that, it sounded like it was very kind of sensitory for you as far as, like you said, taking in the views, the feels, the smells, the sounds, yes. All of that stuff.
Almost all the senses. Touch, a mossy rock, the smells, the sights, the sounds, or the lack thereof.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. And then of course, you know, you mentioned too, when you're younger, you know, taking, girls in these hikes and that kind of stuff. So obviously, you know, there's a little bit of a different situation there, but it sounds like you kind of always enjoyed and wanted to share those experiences with others, obviously to, you know, what you're doing now with guiding and wanting to do that. All right.
I guess it was a good date.
Yeah, I don't blame you, you know, and you gotta, it's always nice to mix kind of an activity with a date as well, especially if it's a first one. It helps cut down some of the awkward silence if you're not talking.
But she swore at me on the way up a lot. It was a hot day and it's a hard hike. I thought she was prepared. I questioned her and re-questioned her to make sure that she was okay with doing such a hard thing. She softened once we got up there. The anger just melted away. And then I broke out a bottle of Matus Rosé and all was good with the wine. It's a nice place up there, tree lining.
had it well planned.
We were at a cabin called Grey Knob. Okay. Particular thing I'm thinking of.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad by the time you got there, all was right again. So,
I had other experiences that led me to this too. Working for the Young Adult and the Youth Conservation Corps when I was 15, and then the Young Adult Conservation Corps when I was 18, I guess. Those were all like doing forestry-like work and stuff. I really liked all of that. Like the idea of working for the fish and game or the forestry, being a forest ranger at that time in my life, that was a real possibility.
Yeah. And kind of a, I'm sure a different experience for you as well, which probably undertook a different, or another appreciation for the outdoors and everything involved with it. Just looking at it from that different angle.
Yeah.
So as, obviously, you know, everything, you know, you got back into the mountains after the being near the ocean and everything like that. And ultimately wanted to start guiding. And you mentioned kind of, they kind of thought you were crazy or whatnot, you know, who does that. So when you started, kind of what like initially, kind of what were those trips or those guides like, you know, like the length, like how many people, like what did that kind of look like as you were sort of finding yourself in the role of a guide, rather than just kind of doing it on your own or with a friend or whatnot?
When it started, it was all group stuff. When I started guiding for the AMC and when I guided for another company, it was mostly groups, just a bunch of strangers put together. And when I started this company, I made things a little bit, made us unique. Most of the stuff we do is like one-on-one. One-on-one is our default. That's our minimum group size is one person.
Okay.
And we can operate on that level. And then of course, the advantage there is it provides a really good experience because it becomes that person's day and not a group compromise, which can be a good thing or maybe not. When you do the bigger groups, you kind of roll the dice. And that was all part of my development to become a guide, was to become exposed to that and the different personalities. This is why I wanted to volunteer. I guided for a couple of meetup groups, and I guided for the AMC, and I did my training, and it was like I had a purpose. I was trying to learn how to guide, learn how to be a good mountain guide. And I've had my challenges. My biggest challenge is pacing, actually. Because I don't necessarily hike at a fast pace. I actually hike at a fairly slow pace, but I use the landscape effectively, and I know how to use my momentum and just certain things, certain tricks that I have that tends to make me move quickly but hike slow at the same time, if you follow me.
Yeah.
I have a long stride. That's one thing, even though I'm not a tall person.
So. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm kind of the opposite. I feel like I have a long stride, but I also like to go fast, which, you know, walking around with the kids and the wife becomes an issue that time because I'm always ahead of them.
Yeah. So I have to walk myself as a guide because I don't want to be in that situation. But when I'm leading a group, I'm usually physically leading the group. In other words, they're behind me. When we're doing like Mount Washington, people usually go up the trails single file.
Yeah.
A leader in the front, a group in the middle, and then a leader in the back, or, you know, something like that. And on the way down, we kind of flip that role. The person that's in charge, the lead guide, if you will, is usually in the back sweeping just to make sure, you know, nobody drops anything, and just it gives you good oversight to the group. At that point, you don't want to lose anybody. You've summited, you're headed down, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to leave anybody behind there. So,
nope.
so you mentioned kind of, you know, the range of people, you know, on the hikes, you know, whether solo or a group or whatnot. Mm-hmm. What are the, like, you know, somebody that wants to do it solo, for instance, are they usually someone that is just, they want to experience a different trail, but maybe it might be intimidating for them, or maybe they're just getting started. So you're looking at something that's a little bit lower as expertise, maybe is the right way to say that. Like what does that kind of look like?
We get a variety of people in a variety of levels. We get some people that are really kind of like pro hikers. They have hundreds, if not thousands, of hikes under their belt, but they hire us because they're also smart enough to know that there's certain things that they should be doing on their own. Sometimes this comes at the urging of a spouse, but there are also lists here, and we help people with these lists. One is the 4,000 footers of New Hampshire. The other's called the 52 of the view list. And then there's a list of trails called the terrifying 25. And you can Google all this stuff. It's interesting reading. All of these lists are things that we can help people with. People are new to hiking. Well, let's do a little 52 of the view peak or something along those lines. We even offer a half day tour and tourist tours for those that really just want to kind of sample the outdoors a little bit. And then, you know, multi-day backpacks, climbing and rock and ice climbing we offer, and mountaineering, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But people come to us at different levels, with different requirements. So some people are looking they're hikers. They're not working on any list. They've done the terrifying 25 and they want to try ice climbing. or try mountaineering, or they want, you know, to expand their options. We do teach people how to be independent. We have a lot of people that hire us over and over and over and over again, but we do make the we do have materials out there, tools out there to help people be independent. We try to teach. We utilize teachable moments on trail. Unless our guests don't want that, then we shut up. It's all about them. You know what I mean? It's not, we step in where safety is concerned. We try to teach, we try to, you know, and a lot of people just love that. They want to know about the area. Some people are from the area. Some people know a lot about the area already. Some could teach us. They're so smart about certain things, you know, history or something. So,
yeah. No, it's cool because it's such a, it sounds like such a kind of diverse group of like levels of people with different experiences looking for different things. But it, yeah, it sounds like a big benefit of how, you know, Redline is kind of set up is there's no trip too big and there's no trip too small almost. So it's kind of satisfactory in that way, no matter what your skill level is or no matter what you're looking for. Sounds really awesome.
I guess it's a little bit like a Goldilocks situation. If you're the, you know, if you're the person coming to us, finding out, it's like, oh, okay. Because it's not about, all right, I'm signing up for your Franconia Notch Traverse. You know, you can do anything you want. And we know the mountains. We've done all of them. And, you know, all the trails. We have hiked all the trails, or a couple of us have. I mean, I have. I've hiked all of the trails described in the White Mountain Guidebook.
Yeah.
1440 miles in the 29th edition. I think that's what I did anyway. They're up to the 31st edition, I think, now.
It's 31st. Oh, wow.
Something like that. Every few years they come out with a new one. They change trails, they add trails, decommission others. So and you know, the education is a big part of our business because we offer straight up education. When you go out with us for an adventure, we will share the history, we will share geology, we will share whatever we know and whatever we think you might be interested in or could use. But we do straight up education too. That's a whole tab on our website, and we offer classes, hiking introduction. So half of it's classroom, then let's go out there and learn what we, you know, talk about what we've learned, and you know, all the way to multi, you know, learn ice climbing. We have a 10-day alpine skills course for somebody that like might want to get into guiding. You know, we'll spend some serious time with them, preparing them. Some of that's overnight stuff and some of that's glacier related stuff. Even though we don't have glaciers in New England, we do teach glacier skills because people need them like out west and stuff. And we're able to do that here pretty easily. You don't actually need to have a crevasse to teach crevasse rescue skills, though it would be nice.
So with that, like how many guides do you have? Because I mean, that's like from the education pieces to the varying trips and everything like that. I mean, it sounds like it's pretty extensive.
I have 16 people, I think, myself okay. included, that we teach and we guide and get out there. They're all independents, but they're all like part of the family too.
Yeah,
it's a cool team. I got some really awesome people, I will say. Like I have one person, and I'm going to bring her up because she's just like cut above the rest. But she's the her name is Arlette Lawn. Apple Pie is her trail name, and she is the first woman, the only woman, to like hike all of the national scenic trails in the United States, like 11 trails, I think.
Really?
You know, that's the AT, the CDT, the PCT, and a bunch of other obscure ones, you know, that are actually quite a bit longer, like the Northern Trail, I think it's like 4,900 miles or some crazy thing, 4,600 miles or something. I'd have to look it up, but she's done all of that. And she's been a guide with me since like pretty much the beginning. Wow. And she really focuses on, she does a lot of women's only stuff. She takes out a group of women and teaches them how to backpack. And Jesus, if you look at what Arlette has done, it's like, yeah, she's in a really good position to share what she knows. And she knows some stuff, you know, to do all that. You're going to, you know, you could be an oblivious person and still just pick up a wealth of information from just surviving all that she has done. It's super impressive. And I have other guys that, you know, they have all like have really cool credentials and have done some crazy things. And it's like, you know, I guess myself included on my profile, I've hiked in the Dolomites. I have hiked in the Alps in Japan. I've done Rainier. I've Hood and Shook Sand. You know, I've done some things that are kind of like cool, but I keep circling back here because I really like hiking and I really like, you know, New Hampshire and the White Mountains. So this is my kind of my area.
Yeah. That's cool though, to have, you know, people have kind of, you know, and your hiking experience is way more than my hiking experience in that regard. But, the girl you mentioned that have done all these big national scenic trails and everything like that, you know, to, you know, when somebody is going to you all to guide, they're getting that full and deeper kind of experience that they might not otherwise, and pick up some tricks and hear some probably good stories along the way as well. How many trips do you do throughout the year?
Hundreds.
So are they usually in, and what is the are there multi-day trips on any of those, or are they?
Oh yeah, we do, especially in the summer. We do some stuff in the wintertime. We'll have people like request winter traverses. And I don't do everything. I mean, I ice climb recreationally. I like to ice climb. I used to rock climb. I can lead both. I've led both before, but I don't really rock climb anymore. I sold my rack years ago. But I have people that do that sort of thing. So I think, you know, like I have one guy, he just started with us. His name is Glenn, and he's just super passionate about climbing. He's just a really skilled ice climber, and he's pretty hardcore mountaineer. And so, you know, if there's something that's like, you know, and I have others like him too. You know, one guy has been a professional guide for 17 years. He works with me all the time. And, but yeah, these guys just have some real skills. So I don't, you know, I won't do that. I will say you guys do that. And I do my things. I guess the thing that I teach most exclusively is the wilderness navigation. It's just it's a map and compass course that involves a lot of critical thinking. It teaches people how to bushwhack. I've been teaching that since I've been guiding, so 10, 11 years that I've been teaching that course. And I was familiar with navigation from Marine. Remember, I used to be in oceans. And I boated. So I understood. I had charts and, you know, nautical charts and all that stuff. So that's a course that I tend to teach myself. I do have one of my senior guides that he goes out and he can teach it. He will go out and do the second day. Sometimes we do a 2-day program, and we have one of those coming up in the fall. I think it's like 8 people, so it'll be me and him both days, day classroom, and they want a second day. It's going to be a 2-day bushwhack or a 2-day experience. So on the second day, we'll take them out and do this really cool bushwhack that I know of.
Nice. Yeah. That sounds awesome. Like I said, kind of just keep adding to those different layers as we've talked about. So obviously, you know, you've been on a lot of hikes yourself. You guided a lot of hikes, seen a lot of different people. Are there any like stories that stand out of, you know, from some of your trips? You know, maybe it's a specific thing that happened on the trail, or maybe it's somebody that you didn't think would come back after they did their first hike, but now they're kind of addicted to it, kind of like you became. Are there kind of any stories like that kind of stand out?
I mean, there's been times where we've like helped people on the mountain that kind of cool experiences there. There was one guy, he's a Marine, and we let a bunch of people use our rope to help aid their descent, and he was like, "I'm a Marine, I don't need it," and he tripped and fell and slid down the mountain.
Oh,
he was okay, but it was like we were like, I won't say anything. So one experience I talk about a lot, and I think there's a little bit of a and I talk about it in an educational sense nowadays. I refer to it in an educational sense, so it has value there. And it's a lot of times we go up Mount Washington, you can have some ridiculously cold temperatures and can be pretty dangerous up there. And trepidation can set in. You lack visibility, or if you're colder than you think you should be, like your hands are freezing is the word you'll use, even though literally they're not freezing yet. But my hands are freezing, and that is the fear starts to set in because the concept of rewarming your hands becomes kind of foreign. You think, oh, my hands are too cold. I can't rewarm them. I need intervention. I need, you know, like super duper mittens or heat warmers, or I need to go inside something. And that would actually, that would solve the problem. They're like the summit doors, they open them up for us and say, come on in, fellas, warm up. We would do that. But there's one fellow I remember, I'm going to say his name is John. And he says, Mike, he's like, you know, and bear in mind, this is during winter on Mount Washington. There was very windy up there and there was snow blowing. And it's, think of the hardest, think of these Antarctic movies. That's what it's like. So he puts his hands in front of my face. He's, my hands are freezing. So fortunately, I'm not going to buy into his fear. I stay calm. I'm going to do my job. And I said, John, we will take care of that. We just need to go over there. And we start moving, because this is all we're doing. We had taken a break on the summit. And once you stop moving, it just, you know, you bundle up right away. As soon as you stop, you bundle up big time. But still within 5 minutes, you're getting really cold again. So you have to get moving. So we eat quickly. And then I just tell him, all right, we're going to go over there. I'll deal with that down there. So he thinks salvation is coming. And I'm thinking, there's no salvation. I'm not going to help the guy because he's not going to need any help in a few minutes. And we just walk down, start walking down the cone. We're walking down the mountain. We're not like pushing hard. Like 5 minutes later, I shout down, hey, John, how are your hands? And he looks up, what? Your hands. I'm waving my hands in here. Your hands were freezing. Oh, they're okay. And it's just, there's something to be said in it. I mean, there's a few lessons in there, just not panicking, not responding to that situation in a way that is alarmist. Yeah. And just moving, the idea, the understanding, the concept of just moving and just exercising is enough to, one, is to help literally with the cold hands, and two, it refocuses the brain, so you're not thinking about your hands anymore. You're thinking about where you're going to put your feet, so you don't, you know, trip and slide down the mountain.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. Kind of that perspective and the mindset to kind of get through that. So with it, obviously, we kind of got into a lot there. But is there anything that I might have overlooked or that we didn't talk about?
Well, the completionist in me wants to say that guy who owned the company who said that wasn't really a possibility to have a hiking guide company. He and I are since become friends, and he says he wishes he hired me. I was getting kicked out of that.
Has he gone on any hikes with you since then?
No, he's not a hiker. He was he's kind of an ice climber. That was his big sport.
Okay.
So, but that's the thing is, like, you know, the people, the guides in the, under his control, are all like really talented climbers. And okay. I have more of a mix. I have some really talented hikers and some really talented runners and some really talented skiers and some really talented climbers too. We don't want to be left out of all the fun. So, all of my guides and myself, we look at what we do as sort of a gift, a blessing, if you will, that we're able to do this kind of work.
Yeah.
That get paid for doing something that you love. And it's so much fun that doing it doesn't ruin that love. So, and hiking certainly qualifies in that regard. When we all try to give back as a thank you, a lot of us do trail work. In fact, my company, we do an annual trails day once a year in the spring or summer, depending. Usually we try to aim for June sometime. But we go out and we take a Saturday and we do trail work. We do it with the cooperation of the Forest Service, and they try to give us something cool to do, which will entice others to come back and, you know, to do it again. We've had some people have done that with us since the beginning, you know, 7 or we've been at it 7 years, so we've done 6 of those. of annual cleanups or annual trails days. A lot of us also volunteer on search and rescue, which is a big thing up here. A lot of people get hurt. A lot of people get injured. Some people die. It's a tragedy. One of the big problems with this area is accessibility. Our mountains are intersected with highways, with parking lots and trailheads galore, and there are so many ways to get yourself in trouble. And people get out of their car with their flip-flops and their water bottles, and they start heading up a summer trail with the best of intentions, looking for that viewpoint. And next thing you know, they're 3.4 miles up there and above tree line. It's like, ooh, it's starting to get cold. And they're getting hypothermic, and just, you know, things can go wrong. So being in search and rescue doesn't really allow me to see any more than that. Because, you know, the whole hiking community is informed by like the Fish and Game about these rescues. They are all published and been posted and, you know, given, I'm putting on social media and stuff. So that helps with the education. We help fill the need for education. And like I said, we do try to make people independent. So like if you book with us, you fill out our booking form, you get a copy of that in an email. And there's an attachment, a 4-page PDF attachment, talks about gear and clothing and starts from the beginning. And it tells you what you need if you're going to hike out there. And then we tell you, put an asterisk next to a few things. But if you're getting guided, you can leave that at home. you know what I mean? So, but we're trying to take that full approach. This is everything you need to hike safely. And since you're being guided, since you've hired us to guide you, we can take this, this, and this. You know, you don't really need a map because we have a map. And here, we'll give you a copy of ours, a photocopy of the area or whatever. So,
yeah, that's helpful. Obviously, in multiple ways for somebody that wants to go out and do their own thing. And then also, you know, I think the trail cleanups and that kind of stuff too is probably a good way to further engage the people that have gone on hikes with you, because I'm sure that there's a lot of participants that way. And then once again, you're seeing a different viewpoint of the trail. You know, you're focusing on cleaning it up and helping in that sense, rather than just enjoying it, which I'm sure kind of helps strengthen that appreciation for the outdoors. Yeah.
I have one trail that I've adopted, and we have other people that do this, trail adopters, they call themselves. And it's one trail I go do every year. And I've had 17 fallen trees on it, and I have to take care of them with an axe. And it's sometimes 3 days of work, but it's, so it is real. It is a real deal. And but then people can walk on that trail. They don't have to deal with the blowdowns. So,
yeah, absolutely. Makes it nicer. So thank you for keeping it beautiful for the other people that are enjoying it.
Beauty and safety.
Absolutely. So one thing I always like to ask our guests is kind of one piece of advice that the listeners can take away. And you mentioned a little bit ago, you know, how special, you know, your job is. You know, you get to do what you love while educating people, while teaching them safety and how to go out on the trail and everything like that. And obviously your experience has seen multiple different levels of hikers and outdoors people and everything like that. What do you think is, like, out of that kind of experiences, what is kind of that most important thing that someone should think about when getting started? You know, maybe they haven't really gone on a hike like that. Maybe they're usually just walking through the park or something like that, but they want to kind of take that next step. What is, like, the most important thing when kind of beginning that outdoor journey per se? If maybe they don't have, you know, maybe if they're not in your area, maybe there's not a local guide, if they're in a different state or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people don't know what they don't know. So in order to, if you're interested, if anybody's listening to this that's actually interested in that, to thwart that, all you have to do is go online, do some research, and then you can learn a ton of information about that. I knew this question was coming about the advice, and I've been thinking about it, and I have one piece of advice that I would give to new hikers or old hikers. I don't care, hikers. It doesn't matter. I think it can touch everyone. And that is going it alone versus going with other people. If you are by yourself, and we see problems with this sometimes, particularly in winter when it's deadly out there. And if people are going alone, they lack the safety. I mean, the ideal group they say is four. The AMC says four people as an ideal group size. That would be a patient, a caregiver, and two runners to go get help. So nobody's ever alone. But even if it's one person, you go up there tree line, your nose is exposed and it's in the, you know, it's 30 degree wind chills or something like that, you can get frostbite. And the end of your nose will get waxy white. Guess what you don't feel? You don't feel that happening. But your buddy, the person you hike with, the person that you should be with and you should stick with, can see and say, hey, they can point at your nose and you're going to know what they're talking about because you've done your research. And you say, oh, I must be getting frostbite. So then you peel back your glove or your mitten a little bit. And you put your palm and your hand on the end of the nose. I'm actually doing this. This is why I sound squished. But I'm warming up the end of my nose, and then I pull my hand away, and I look at my buddy, and he gives me a thumbs up, or she gives me a thumbs up, whatever the case. It doesn't have to be a guy, but this is just something that I have seen. It is a repeat thing. And it's, you have to ask yourself, they say that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Well, all these people that are breaking off from their groups, or they're going it alone, they're getting hurt, they're dying out there. Maybe that's the commonality. Maybe that is, that needs to be solved.
Yeah.
So people need to remember that. They're just having one person, you know. So that would be a bit of advice I would say would apply to pretty much anyone. Even these old codgers that have done the grid, which is to do all the 48 4,000 footers I told you about,
yeah,
in every month of the year. So it's 576 height peaks or something like that. Even people have done that. They can get in trouble if they're going it alone. They twist an ankle. Anything can happen. You know, equipment breakage. You know, you try to stay on top of things, but things can get out of control. So not going it alone, I think, is probably the most important one.
Yeah.
You know, we consider some of our hikes companion hikes. We call them companion hikes because the person going doesn't need us. They just need somebody to go with them, somebody that's not going to become a liability. And guess what? Having a guide with you, probably not going to become a liability because as a guide, we want to make sure we bring our A game all the time. So we're dialed in, we're prepared. And I do tell people when you get to be really good at something like this, it doesn't get any easier. The decision-making that we go through doesn't get any easier. It gets harder. But more often than not, the results of those decisions is what we're looking for. So we make the right decisions, but it takes us, we think about it more. And I remember this from guiding with others, you know, in the morning, we're all getting together, we're all going to be doing our own thing. What are you wearing for boots today? We would have this conversation. It's a bunch of guides with a ton of experience. We're talking about what boots, because we don't want to screw it up. In a way, we don't want to wear our heaviest boots. We want to wear the boots that are most comfortable, but we also don't want to get cold feet. So, you know, and some of those days it's like, well, it's going to be negative 10. And I know that that's usually the cutoff, but hey, we got loose snow up there. I can stick my feet in the snow, which is going to help a lot. All kinds of things we do.
Yeah. No, that's a great piece of advice. And, you know, to kind of have that team with you, even if it's just a single person, and kind of watch out for each other and cross check everybody.
Even going with somebody and splitting up, I have seen that time and time again create problems. I've seen tears over that sort of thing. So it usually does not end well. So the conventional wisdom is you go in together, you hike together, and you leave together. And yeah. you're only halfway there when you're standing on the summit. Which always amuses me when I tell people that and they look up. It's like they're standing on the tallest peak in the Northeast. And but then they get it. because we're not back until we're back at the parking lot.
Yeah, so you gotta go back down. So
yeah,
that's great. So
going up is optional, coming down is mandatory.
Yes,
one of those great mountaineers said that at this year's.
to that point, where can people find you online to their learn more? Obviously, you mentioned a lot about the educational aspect. Obviously, there's a lot of opportunities to go on different hikes and that kind of stuff. But where can people find you online, see what you're up to, and see how to get involved?
So redlineguiding.com is our web address, and on our navigation it says blog. And I would subscribe to our blog if you want to stay up to date. That's probably the best means to stay up to date with what we're doing. We do have a presence on a lot of social media, but a lot of it we don't use. But we're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We post a few photos and stuff. I'm older, so I'm a Facebook versus an Instagram, right? but mostly blog posts. We do a lot of... Well, I used to do a lot. I'm run into a little bit of a writer's block, if you will, because it's like the same old stuff year in and year out. The same spring dangers of the spring dangers last year with the spring dangers this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a lot of content doesn't change. So it ends up you retelling the same things. So, but I try to come up with stuff. If people look in under the experience category or the how-to category, they can come up with some real good ones. And I write, I've been published a few times in like the Appalachia Journal. I wrote, and if people want to look this up on our blog, it's a short story, but it's called How I Died Hiking. And I have a few others along that vein that are just kind of like, that they can be chilling. Especially if you're a hiker and you kind of understand if you can envision what I'm envisioning when I'm, as I'm writing this. So,
yeah.
But How I Died Hiking, it's an imagined tale. I submitted it to the Appalachia Journal and they immediately got back to me and said, we don't do fiction. I said, okay. I said, but I didn't die. And I said, but I, you know, this is, so they read it overnight and it got back to me in the morning. We want to publish that.
Nice.
So and they just realized that they needed to preface it, that this is an imagined tale. So
that's awesome though. It definitely sounds something worth checking out as well. But everybody definitely make sure, check out the website, social media, get involved if you can, if you're in the area, or, you know, learn something new as well. But, Mike, I appreciate you coming on the show, sharing your story and your hiking journey that you've had. And it's been so awesome to hear kind of, how you're helping others and educating others at the same time to enjoy the same thing that you do. So, I appreciate that again, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks. I appreciate the opportunity, and this has been a ton of fun.
Thanks for listening. And hey, if you made it this far and like what you've heard, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and let your friends know about Life in Motion. Until next time.